We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
We're here with you on a Friday morning. Glad you're with us. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guest joining us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. That was John Harbaugh, the Ravens head coach, a few weeks ago, basically saying, look, man, all these guidelines you're trying to tell us to do with the virus, it was humanly impossible to do if we were trying to play a football game.
So not only is it a contact sport, it's a highly communicative sport
well done.
As well. Thank you. Only took two. And he said it's going to be very difficult to do with the mask and the way we have to talk and communicate. But, you know, you're going to have to learn to do it. Once you get to the actual football, it's going to have to be football or there's no sense in playing it. You can't change that part of it.
Right.
But they're looking to change and or make it as safe as possible, everything leading up to that point.
So speaking along those lines, it's time for some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Malcolm Jenkins, who is back with the Saints now getting ready to roll, is also just been hired by CNN as a social injustice correspondent, basically, because he's taken such a proactive voice over these months since the killing of George Floyd and several others. And then even before that, when he was with the Eagles, he was very proactive in trying to get things going for racial equality, and especially dealing with police. So he's been very, very active and outspoken on this. And recently on CNN, Malcolm was asked about what he thinks about football. And he said football to him at this time in America is a non-essential business.
The NBA is a lot different than the NFL because they can actually quarantine all of their players or whoever is going to participate. Where we have over 2,000 players, even more coaches and staff, we can't do that. And so we'll end up being kind of on this trust system where the honor system, where we just have to hope that guys are social distancing and things like that. And that puts all of us at risk, not only, you know, us as players and who's in the building, but when you go home to your families. I have parents that I don't want to get sick. And I think until we get to the point where we have protocols in place and until we get to the place as a country where we feel safe doing it, we have to understand that football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. And so the risk, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back.
So all of this is an interesting discussion because on the base level, he's 100% right.
Yes, yes, he is.
I mean, the country can move forward without football.
And the difference of the NBA and the NFL.
Massive.
Right.
It's just it's a much bigger target to try and move. Couple of things. It's not going to be eliminated. Well, it's never going to be – the risk is never going to be eliminated. So let's just understand that right now.
It's not going to be eliminated at least to a safe point until we have a vaccine, right? That's when people, I think, are – the next time people are going to feel safe, at least safer about this is – when there's a vaccine.
Yes.
Then I think a lot of people will feel like the flu. You get your flu shot, you get your COVID-19 shot, and you feel a little better about, you know, getting back to life. But when he says has to really be eliminated before you're comfortable returning to play, well, then prepare not to be comfortable.
Right.
And it will be interesting because Malcolm Jenkins will have a decision. Will he go back and play?
It sounds like he's made his decision.
Every player will have the right to go or to not go.
Yeah.
And as he said, football is a non-essential business, so we don't need to do it. So the risk, you know, has to be really eliminated before we, and then he said, before I would feel comfortable going back. I think we can safely say the risk is not going to be eliminated. No. It is just not. As a matter of fact, unfortunately, from cases, and I'm not talking about hospitalizations or deaths, where in some cases that's not going up, but the cases are going up. And that's all it's going to take. As I keep saying in sports, it's the positive tests.
Yeah.
It's not, God forbid, we get to the point where an athlete is hospitalized, incubated, you know, has the ventilator or God forbid, dies and this all wasn't worth it because it is non-essential, save for, I guess you could say it's non-essential, save for those who rely on this as income, which, well, yeah, which there are people out there.
Including us, if we're honest about it.
Well, I mean, not really. As a fan, I mean, I'm talking about the people who serve food, the people who truck the food, the people who's who have an actual business that involves those games, those home games. Quite honestly, they're going to be affected anyway because there's not going to be fans in the stadium. So the essential people involved in the non-essential game are already going to be losing out.
But then there's the thought process of from a emotional, mental stress point. I mean, the idea of not, I mean, the idea of, we're all waiting for sports, right? We're like, thank God we got this, you know, cornhole, thank God that's on, we'll watch something.
Right.
The idea of not having a football season, I think, would be a major blow to the American psyche.
Yeah.
And I understand.
Yeah, I can't think
the
of
other,
that.
The other thing is more important, but there is something to the idea of the stark reality of that sinking in to a lot of people. Look, he's 100% right. It's not essential for us to move forward, but it is kind of essential for a lot of other ancillary reasons that are not as important as health and safety, but they are important.
Yeah, I'm not going down that road. If it's we're getting positive tests, bag this thing. I mean, we're all going to
be going to get positive.
We're all going to be. I mean, enough to bag it.
Yeah.
Enough to end this thing. I'm not worried about the mental state of the fan because they can't watch football. It's already a shame that the people who make a lot of their living because of things in the stadium aren't going to be able to do it because stadiums won't be full. Yeah, if we don't have football, we're all going to survive. We're all going to be just fine, but we are going to at least try and start to have football. So this will be interesting with Malcolm Jenkins. He is, again, is a 12-year vet. He's been around a long time in the game. And I think, as in most sports, if you give athletes the chance, they're going to go play.
Yeah.
They're going to feel, okay, A, it won't happen to me. B, if it happens to me, we've already seen other NFL players test positive, and then they go through it, and then they're fine, and then they resume what they're doing. So I think 99% of players are going to go back. Malcolm Jenkins just put himself in an interesting situation and said, I'm not going back until the threat has been eliminated. It's not going to be eliminated.
Right.
It's not.
And Andrew Brandt, who used to work for us and does great stuff, said it best. If it was simply about the health and the risk to the players and their safety, no contact sports would be played.
Right, exactly.
But we're all in this situation of what are we risking versus what
– right.
Where are we, what we're willing to – I don't want to say sacrifice. What we're willing to allow – to make sure that things continue to move forward.
Right.
And that's the delicate balance that everybody has to deal with. Malcolm, in many ways, because you said 12-year veteran, is a made guy.
Right, exactly.
He's
right.
got a lot of money, and he doesn't have to worry about that. There are a lot of people in the NFL that aren't in his situation and are saying,
most
no.
Most aren't.
Yeah. No, I need this.
Yeah.
You know. So everybody's going to come at this from a different perspective, but he's put it out there right now, which is saying, right now, until that happens, I'm not coming back. Guess what? That won't happen by July 28th, and it's probably not going to happen by September 10th either. So we'll see how that plays out with him and his situation going forward. All of that is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise.
Golic
and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
One of those coaches joins us now, James Franklin, head coach at Penn State. Coach, we appreciate you joining us this morning. So how has it been going from the testing process to positive tests to just how the players have been responding to the voluntary workouts?
Good morning, guys. Appreciate you having us on. You know, as you can imagine, it's like most things, I guess. You know, you work extremely hard and you're as thorough as you possibly can and you're detailed and you have what you think is a great plan. And that's theory. And then you get into reality of them coming back, and it's challenging. You know, it's extremely challenging. And, you know, we were fortunate that we took a little bit more of a patient approach than most because we wanted to be able to learn from other colleges. We wanted to be able to learn from other professional sports leagues, things they did well, maybe some things that they would have done differently. And for the most part, things have been good. You know, the other thing I think we did a pretty good job of is on the front end, We had weekly meetings with both the parents and the players while they were home, explaining everything in detail, and also making sure that everybody knew that there was no pressure and this was truly a choice, you know, whether they wanted to come back or not. And we have 38 players that have not returned, including 6 scholarship players. So it is truly voluntary. I know that's kind of some of the thoughts out there. Oh, this isn't voluntary. Well, I can tell you at Penn State it is. And then, you know, the guys that have been back, I think, are very comfortable with how it's been going. It's not easy. You know, they have to wear masks all the time. They can't get into the facility without, you know, answering a questionnaire when they get up in the morning. They get their temperature taken before they come in. Any symptoms, any signs, any issues, you know, obviously, then we deal with that and quarantines go into effect. And then everybody's been tested. You know, we all did the nose test, which I'll tell you, it wasn't very fun. Yeah. getting that thing stuck down your nose. But so far, so good. And I think our parents and our players that have returned are appreciative of how thorough we've been. And be honest with you, it's gone well. You know, and even for the staff, it's different. You know, so we're doing every other day. The offense is in one day, staff, and the defense is in another day. And we are all sitting in the team meeting room so we can spread out far enough in the room from each other. We all got assigned seats. We're wearing masks, sitting in there watching film and game planning. And I come in every day, and then the offense and defense rotate by days. And then we don't have any of the non-essential staff here. They're continuing to all work from home via Zoom. So it's just offense and defense and coaches every other day, and then the strength staff and the medical staff's all here, and that's pretty much it. So far, so good. I know that was a long answer, but I wanted to be thorough with you guys.
No, we appreciate it. Yeah. And that's what we're looking for, as much information as possible. As James Franklin, Penn State head coach, is with us. And, Coach, for you, it's a different scenario. You are at Happy Valley. Your family is staying home at Florida. And you have some members of your family that might have some things that might compromise them. Is that why you decided to do this the way you've done it?
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, let me state this. You know, we're fortunate as a family that we do have a second home, and I know not everybody has that option, so let me lead with that. But, yeah, you know, we were in Florida. We have a place in Florida. We've been there basically for the last couple months. You know, my wife has been extremely, you know, sensitive to all of this, and we have been when I tell you we have not left our property in months, you know, we would order our groceries to be delivered. They'd sit outside for a certain period of time. We'd wipe them down. Our youngest, we have two daughters. They're 11 months apart. One is 12 and one is 13. And our youngest daughter has sickle cell disease, not trait. She's got the full blown disease. So for us, you know, our child's experience is a little bit different than most. So, you know, everything that you have to worry about with your child is just heightened for us. So if our daughter gets a fever, she's in the hospital for 48 hours. That's been her entire life until it clears. Sickle cell is an African-American blood disease. It's an autoimmune disease. Makes her susceptible, you know, to a lot of things. And to be honest with you, with the virus, we don't completely know how it's going to affect her. So as a family, you know, we just decided, you know, for us, that it'd probably be in our best interest for our family to stay in Florida and for us to be apart, you know, for at least the first half of the year, because my wife and kids come to the office all the time. They come to practice all the time. They come to all the games, obviously. And we just felt like them being here in town, it'd be challenging for me to come to work every single day and then come home to them. And we thought it'd be challenging if they were in this town to not be coming to games and practices and the facility. It would be more challenging. And, you know, we decided to homeschool our kids this year because we didn't feel like our other daughter could go to school and bring issues home to our other daughter. So I know there's a lot of people are dealing with this, with some family member, a wife or a husband or a child, but that's how we have chose to deal with this. And as you can imagine, a lot of tears, you know, when possibly, we're going to be apart for possibly 6 months. So that was difficult getting on that, you know, plane to come back to Happy Valley and leave my family for a long period of time.
Certainly that is without question the most important thing is the health of your family, especially your daughter who suffers from that. So I'd imagine that that's got to be weighing heavy on your mind. And then again, there's the football part of this, and you gave a great explanation of where you are now. So when, if everything still runs according to plan,
hey guys, can I say one more thing? I apologize.
Yes.
And just so you know, just again, to be thorough with this, you know, we have a player on our team that's got an autoimmune, disease. Right. And, you know, him and his family, they want to come back. He said, Coach, we've been fighting with this and dealing with this, you know, our whole life. And, you know, we want to come back and be a part of the program. And we have taken a more conservative approach as a program than the young man and the family want to. We just feel like that's the right thing to do. And then, you know, we're starting to come out with an entirely different plan for him when and if we do bring him back and how we'll do that. You know, so I guess what I'm saying is there's just so many details, and football is challenging just based on the numbers. You know, when you got certain sports and maybe there's 15 players, that's one thing. But when you got 120 players and staff with so many different backgrounds and health issues and concerns, there's just a lot that goes into all of this.
So then it leads me perfectly into this next question. There is so much that schools, athletic directors, you as head coaches have to deal with, but then eventually, Coach, you got to play football.
Right.
So the NCAA has given dates where you can compare it to kind of like OTAs in the NFL. When, if everything is, when will you actually be on the field and oh my God, actually having a huddle and having players play on the field, the game of football?
Well, one positive, as you guys know, is no one huddles anymore. So that helps a little bit. But, I think at the end of the day, you know, for all of us, and this is in football, and this is in life, and this is state by state and businesses, is we got to do everything we possibly can do to keep everybody as safe as we can. And then with that, people have choices to make. Our players have choices to make. The staff has choices to make. You know, local government's got choices to make. Fans have choices to make. You know, and the reality is we can't reduce all risk. That's just a reality. And that's always the case. You know, you're going to take on some risk. But the thing that you have to do is you have to be educated and you have to be informed. And I'm a big believer in science, and I'm a big believer in listening to experts, and then make the best choices we possibly can make. But I think at the end of the day, as long as everybody is informed and you're doing everything you possibly can to keep everybody healthy, then I think you got a chance. And for me, you know, I feel good because I think in the state of Pennsylvania, you look at our numbers, we've done a really good job of handling this. I'm going to be honest with you. Being in the South, in Florida, it was a different world than being in Pennsylvania. You know, You're in Pennsylvania, everybody's wearing a mask. There's social distancing. You go into a grocery store, it's amazing how they're running the grocery stores and everything else. And our numbers are really good. And then there's other states and other areas that you look on social media or you watch TV or you look outside and it's very different. You know, so we're fortunate that the state of Pennsylvania has handled this extremely well. But as you know, when you're playing college football, you're not just dealing with the state of Pennsylvania. You're traveling and all the issues that come with that. So, you know, I think for us, I'm pleased with how we've gone about it. But, you know, there's so many challenges that come with it. You know, I think we got a really good plan when the players are with us. But what happens when they go away? You know, when they go away from us and they're back in their apartments or they're back in their dorms, you know, that's the challenge, because we got to remember they're still 18 to 22 year old kids, which, you know, based on my 25 years of experience, 18 to 22 year old males are the most unpredictable people on the planet. And we got to spend as much time talking to them and informing them and educating them on the sacrifices that they have to make this work And then I think we also have responsibility through social media or whatever else it is to educate our fans. You know, we averaged 106,000 fans per game last year. We averaged. So our fans want that, you know, and I don't think that's going to happen. But if you do, then the better that we're all behaving, you know, in terms of following all these protocols, the better chance that we have to have something that looks similar to that.
So, James, we're running up against the clock here, but I did want to ask you this one real quickly as Penn State head coach James Franklin is with us. We've seen a lot of player empowerment for causes that they believe in recently with what happened to Chuba Hubbard at Oklahoma State, Kylin Hill at Mississippi State. You dealt with something on a different level last year when a couple of Penn State players received letters basically saying, hey, cut your hair, do this to look more like a Penn State player. They made those letters public, and you guys backed your players. What are you seeing in terms of players standing up for things that they believe in, specifically in the social injustice that has been sweeping across this country?
Well, I think, first of all, as an African-American head football coach, you know, one of very few in all of Division I athletics, you know, I have a responsibility to empower our players and empower our staff to have great discussions and dialogue. And how can we make Penn State better? How can we make our community better? How can we make our state better, our country and our world better at some point? And, you know, whenever adversity or challenges come, you know, the reality is there's tremendous opportunity in that, you know, so that's how we're embracing it. We've had great conversations as a team. We've had great conversations with the president of our university and the chair of the board. And we want to make change that we think is needed. But, you know, our players have done a great job of having really good discussions and dialogue and creating allies across the campus and across the community of how can we work together to create a better Penn State, to create a better world for our children one day. So, you know, I'm very proud of how our program has handled it. We want to continue to do that. There should be uncomfortable conversations going on around the dinner table of America. There should be uncomfortable conversations happening in a locker room. People have to be comfortable to speak up, because the only way we're going to grow through this and the only way we're going to evolve is people willing to be vulnerable. And that is black people, that is white people, that is Catholic people, that is Jewish people. We got to talk. And I think one of the biggest problems we've had in our country for a long time is too many smart people have been uncomfortable having this conversation, so they've avoided it. Let's talk.
Yeah, can't avoid it anymore. Yeah. Coach, as always, we appreciate your time, your perspective. All my best to you and your family, okay?
Thanks, Coach.
You too, guys. Thank you so much.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We're delighted to be joined once again by our good friend, Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC. Greg, thanks for joining us here. We appreciate your time. You know, when we last had you on, we kind of joked, were you prepared to have Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach in the same state at the same time? And lo and behold, here we had Lane Kiffin, Mike Leach, as well as a host of another very, very prominent athletic members from schools in Mississippi together lobbying the legislation at the state of Mississippi to change the flag and remove that Confederate emblem. What did you make of the show of a unity and support behind that by everybody?
Well, with a smile on my face, I noted that Ben Howland was in between the two of them in the photo I saw, so I'd love to know what Ben Howland heard yesterday. In all seriousness, it was a real show of leadership from my perspective. I give a great deal of credit to the leaders of the universities and colleges in the state of Mississippi who showed up to make a clear statement about the need for change. And Nikki McCray, who's a new women's basketball coach at Mississippi State, and Kermit Davis, the men's basketball coach at Ole Miss. I think we're both eloquent in having the opportunity to share thoughts on behalf of themselves and their colleagues of the need for change and to remove the symbol and create what is a more welcoming environment in the state that in many ways has been welcoming and just has had that symbol lingering for decades and decades.
And just so we understand, because it come from the SEC, you the SEC, that if this flag isn't changed, that there will be no conference championships held in the state of Mississippi?
Yeah, that's right. And it would be a policy step that I would recommend to our conference officially, but we have not considered a state with a Confederate emblem and an official display to host our predetermined championships. And this began for me back in 2015, 5 years ago this month, when I first became commissioner. And the state of South Carolina had the Confederate battle flag displayed on its state capitol. Change happened. Governor Nikki Haley was great in leading people and bringing them together. And our women's basketball tournament is now played in Greenville, South Carolina. NCAA basketball tournaments have returned to that state. So there are great opportunities out there. And we want to see the positive. We want to be encouraging as part of this change and are certainly hopeful that it can be accomplished.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey joining us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on sequence for a wear test using SAE 5W30. And Commissioner, part of this and what's going on in Mississippi was also sort of brought to the forefront by another player stepping up and letting his voice be heard in college athletics. And that was Mississippi State running back Kylan Hill, who essentially said, I will not play for Mississippi State anymore. I cannot represent this state if that flag is in there or that emblem is on the state flag of Mississippi. And we've certainly seen that really take place in several places over the last weeks and months or so, whether it was Marvin Wilson, the linebacker at Florida State, or Chuba Hubbard, the running back at Oklahoma State. These players are understanding their power and using their platform in a way that I think we've never seen before, and it's been a remarkable sort of change in the dynamics that we've normally been used to in college athletics.
Well, you know, every day I walk by a vision statement headed to my office that talks about developing leaders who will change the world, literally. That's a part of our expectation. And in a way, it's not surprising that as we take young people from adolescence into adulthood, they're educated, they're put into a setting, generally in the university, that most of them have not experienced. You know, you're in high school, it's a different world. You've got friends from your zip code, not from across the world, literally, on our campuses. And so that education is real. And despite what the cynics might suggest, the ability to grow leaders through college athletics is a meaningful part of the experience. And so you then see that extended through these communications. Now, part of education is to learn how to communicate effectively and responsibly. And so the statement about I don't want to represent that flag, or in Oxford at the University of Mississippi, football student athletes speaking on social media about moving a monument in town, to those statements made across the country. I don't think that we really should be all that surprised that we've done exactly what we're responsible to do, and that is to educate people to use their voices. And it is a platform. It's one that has to be used responsibly, but one that provides, in this moment in our country, the ability to call attention to the need for change in areas that are important to young people.
Talking to Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, and again, before we even put a helmet on any of these players, we're talking about issues that are much bigger than football, the social issues we just talked about. And then, you know, the health of the players, and I know health is considered every year, but in light of the pandemic and all the different protocols and testings we've seen, and we've seen a lot of positive tests, which I don't think we're shocked at seeing positive tests, but we're seeing a large number in some cases. Where are you, Greg, on your comfort level on the amount of positive tests we're seeing and the protocols that are in place?
From my perspective, as we go through these updates, I think it's really important when numbers come out, to the extent the information is available, we understand what the numbers mean. So just listening to the introduction, not every one of those circumstances, as I understand, are positive tests. So you may have players in large numbers in isolation because of being around people that have tested positive. That's a reality of the plans put in place. So as you noted, Mike, we never thought there would be no tests. In fact, when people came back to campus, tests were positive. The good news for college athletics is we have embedded medical staffs who provide care all the time for student athletes. We've had to augment those staffs because of COVID, just like all of us around this country are having to change the way we behave or maybe access testing or visit with our healthcare professionals more and more. So we are absolutely attentive to the realities of the positive tests. Again, the information shared with me is those positive tests aren't coming from these workout activities. We're in voluntary workouts. I think, Mike, you described it really well at the beginning of how the summer typically plays out. So we're in voluntary workouts. We're not in practice. We're not playing games, and we're providing care. And I can tell you, coaches and administrators have said to me, you know, I'm quarantining someone for 2 weeks who's not tested positive, who is healthy, but that's our protocol. It's frustrating for that young person, but it's also a lesson that I think has meaning for all of us, that we have to be responsible in this COVID reality to take care of ourselves, to have the proper distancing, to wear a mask, correct hygiene and sanitization so we can move forward with our lives. And part of that is to see college football return.
Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner, is with us, and we're beginning the process of getting people ready for college athletics in the fall. And there was a report, Greg, in The Athletic that at least three of the Power 5 conferences, the ones named were Big 12, Big 10, and Pac-12, are considering pushing back the date for their football championship games to make space for potential makeup games. Is this something that the SEC has thought about in light of the COVID reality that we're dealing with?
You know, with a smile on my face, I read that article and heard some interviews because one of the natural occurrences, now let's go back to 9/11, for example, and everybody pivoted a week later. So, you know what? One of the first questions that we're going to ask is what flexibility do we have? Now, that doesn't mean that's going to happen, but we've, I think, all been responsible to ask the question about what flexibility around the schedule might we be able to create, and the end date is a piece of that. And my message has been, I probably said it the last time I was on, my focus is on playing, I'm preparing to play the season as scheduled, but the circumstances around this virus are going to guide us in our decision-making. And that decision-making would contain all kinds of scenarios, that being one, that ability to have some flexibility on the end of our season. But it's not something that we've seen as important to activate or really communicate about, because there are well over a dozen and almost two dozen potential scenarios that we could draw out on a piece of paper for consideration.
So basically you're saying you can do some of those, I guess, for lack of a better term, you can make some of those decisions on the fly?
You could. You know, the question, Mike, and I think it goes back to really the analysis of what's happening now, is how much disruption will occur. And I'm not one to predict exactly what's going to happen and when. I am one who wants to prepare. And we may, in fact, have to adapt on the fly. We may come to a decision point in the next 6 weeks or 7 weeks before the season begins about adjustment. I think that's the reality of a narrowing window of time, but we've used the time since March to think about what could happen. And we'll have to see what the circumstances around the virus guide us to as far as answering those questions.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey with us, and you mentioned disruption. Obviously, we're all trying to figure out the least disruptive way to potentially play sports going forward. And you mentioned earlier the testing that has come through when these athletes come back to campus. It's not the workouts that are bringing the positive test. It's they're bringing it with them from where they were. So if the athletes are bringing the COVID and not getting it when they're going to the workouts, what are your expectations when the student body is back? Because we're talking about the bubble environment that we find some certain sports trying to play in, specifically the NBA. That's going to be difficult in college. So what are your expectations for potential disruptions when you have the athletes who are there and doing what they're trying to do to get ready, but then you bring potentially the general student body back, and you'd have to expect there would be positive tests when they return to campus as well?
I think every campus is adapting and planning for that return. And, you know, you've seen reports about gatherings kind of as students in college normally do. Probably you guys can remember being 19 and 20 year olds and what college life was
barely.
Like. One of the realities is the college life experience when we were 19, 20, 21 years old will not be this fall's college experience. And that's one of the lessons that people will have to accept. And just like we've all had to change our lifestyle since March, the college experience will be a bit different. There'll still be residential learning. There'll still be education provided, but how we care for ourselves will have to be real. And so that's, we literally had a conversation yesterday about how can our student athletes help educate their fellow students to avoid spread. And that's one of the projects that's still being worked on. But I know our campuses are preparing for the return, for providing the proper information, the proper resources, and the proper health care.
And we'll see what happens going forward. Commissioner, as always, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your insight. Thanks for being with us. And, again, we'll see what happens as we go forward, getting closer and closer to potentially the start of college football in the fall. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Greg.
Yep. Thank you.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. Very interesting where that went.
We're delighted to be joined by our colleague at ESPN, sports anchor, and masher of the golf.
You said he's a bomb driver, right?
Dude, you want to feel emasculated? Play around with Michael
Really?
Leaves. Yeah, it won't end well for you. We're joined now by my friend, our friend Michael Leaves. Michael, first and foremost, what was the reaction on tour, and how has the reaction on tour been up there since the spate of the test and the understanding that, hey, we need to tighten this thing up a little bit?
Well, I mean, verbally, Trey, Mike, good morning, guys. Verbally yesterday, they were all showing their support for Jay Monahan and the tour in terms of what they've been doing. They were actually putting the onus more on themselves and other players to be a little more strict with their guidance to the protocols. Because here's the deal. Once you get tested for COVID-19 and you come back negative, I mean, let's be real. Like, you feel kind of emboldened by it. Because I had to take a test Tuesday in order for me to be on the grounds at TPC River Highlands this week, and I got the test negative. I'm like, all right, cool, I'm good. And so if you're surrounded in an environment of everyone that you know has tested negative, you feel pretty good about interacting with those people. The problem is you don't know what those people are doing when you're not looking at them, right? And just because I don't have the virus on Tuesday or Wednesday does not mean I can't get it Friday or Saturday. And I think that line of thinking was driven home by two players and now two caddies in the last 6 days coming down with the virus. And it was just a wake-up call, as one player described it yesterday. And what I saw on the golf course after Jay Monahan's announcement at his press conference the day before is you saw a few more guys coming to the driving range in the practice area wearing masks. So that means they were probably encountering some other people up by the clubhouse, so they'd been a little more cautious. And I didn't see one fist bump on the golf course yesterday. And granted, I didn't see every group. But, I mean, you guys know customary in golf. You take your hat off, you shake your hand of every person in the group. But since they've come back from the shutdown, you didn't see that. But you saw occasional fist bumps from guys who are really close on the tour. Yesterday, I saw none of that whatsoever.
So while they were kind of listening to the words of the commissioner, do you think there's any trepidation amongst players now? Because not only do we have positive tests, we had players pull out for their own health concerns when there were these positive tests as well. So do you feel there's a little more nervousness going on now or no?
No, Mike, I didn't get that impression at all. Like, you would think that would be the immediate reaction, but I really felt from the players I've talked to and the other, you know, press conferences that I watched, is that no, the guys feel the tour's doing it right. It's up to the players and the caddies and now the swing instructors, everyone who's inside the bubble now officially, it's up to them to adhere to these guidelines and just be a little more strict with it. They think, you know, you sort of have this sense of empowerment when you have this negative test, but that doesn't mean you can't get it the very next day.
Yeah, Michael Leaves with us as we're talking about PGA Tour protocols. And, Michael, one of the instances where they believe a caddy might have picked up the virus was Graham McDowell's caddy was supposed to fly on his private plane up there, and then the plane that they got was a little smaller. So as a caddy, you're like the first one out. So he got bumped to a Southwest flight, and they thought and that flight was apparently packed, and he thinks that might have been the case, although you can't tell
right.
where he may have picked up the virus. Is there any talk about the PGA Tour? Because they have that charter. If you want to get on that charter plane, I talked to Jordan Spieth about this Monday, you got to do all the screening and get on that test. Has there been any talk about maybe expanding the charter system on the PGA Tour so we can eliminate some of these issues?
They have plenty of seats and plenty of planes for everybody. Some of these guys, they've just been accustomed, Trey, to traveling private on their own and doing it on their own schedules. They don't want to adhere to a schedule, quite honestly, or they want to go home first, do some things at the house, and then go to the next tour stop. That's the difference in the travel protocol, because there's plenty of seats for both caddies and players on those charters from tour stop to tour stop. So expanding it's not really the issue. It's just whether guys want to take advantage of that amenity from the tour or just do it themselves as they've always done it for the last couple of years, especially the top players on tour who have all the money.
Yeah, let me just say this, and it is a hard thing to do. Like, if you have been accustomed to flying that way, to go another way, that's a hard turn to make, Michael.
I used to travel with the Angels and Clippers on the road, and first class charter travel is different than regular travel. And then if you're on a G6 or G7 compared to like a chartered 737, that's next level too. So once you get the taste of that fine life, you ain't really trying to give it up unless you absolutely have to. There's no question.
So right.
Let me tell you what, you get spoiled and you don't want to go back. So
I'm sure
as Michael Leaves joins us, he's out at the tournament in Cromwell, TPC. I'm sure Mackenzie Hughes would like to end up being one of those guys. Yeah. Here's a guy that shot 78 in the final round at the Heritage last week and a 60 yesterday. It's incredible how well he played. So you can talk about his play. And then the thought, can he hold on to this thing?
Well, that's the thing. And he just played lights out. And sometimes in your golf career, especially guys at that level, you're going to have those days where every time you look at the hole, it starts to get bigger and bigger. And Mackenzie Hughes said that yesterday. He started rolling in putts, and then he felt like he could make everything. And he actually had a 40-footer on the last to shoot 59. And I can't believe he left it short, quite honestly. Like, if you're trying to get 59, you can't leave it short. You got to make 3 feet coming back. But he left it short. But to go out and do that in the first round, Mike, for a younger player who's not at the status of, you know, some of the other guys on the leaderboard, now you've got to feel the pressure to sort of live up to that. Like, if you shoot 60 on Thursday and come back with a 68 or 69 on Friday, you feel kind of bad about that, right? Because low scores at TPC River Highlands are there for the taking. It's going to take a lot from him to maintain that type of pace. I mean, he's not going to shoot 60 again, but even to come back today with a reasonable 66 would be impressive considering how low he went on Thursday.
Yeah, 18 shots different from his last round.
Unreal.
The next one,
I've experienced that before. Just not I didn't shoot 60.
Yeah, just in the opposite way.
Exactly.
Mike, you've seen me do that on several occasions. Michael Leaves with us this morning, and we would be remiss if we didn't bring up the larger issues that where sports and the social issues in life have met at a confluence over the last 3 months or so with everything that's gone on in this country. And Mike has done a great job leading us as a company through a lot of this. Michael, as you see all these things happening and so many athletes standing up and using their platforms, whether it's college football players understanding the power they have now to demand and ask for change, the SEC saying we will not have championships in the state of Mississippi, Bubba Wallace standing up for what he believes in and the blowback for what that noose was and what it wasn't in there, what are you seeing and hoping for in positive change for this country and really taking advantage of the moment and making sure it moves forward?
Well, quite honestly, Trey, I think we're living it in the greatest turning point of our respective lives. You know, we go back and look at history and study history, and I'm a huge history buff, and you look at these periods in time, you're like, wow, I wonder what it was like to live in that moment. And you think of the 1960s as, like, you know, the most dramatic decade of change in modern American history. But again, that was 10 years, right? So it took a long time within that decade for a lot of change to come through. We are in that moment in our lifetimes right now. And oftentimes, as has been over the last 100 years at least, sports has always been at the front of that change. Do you think Jackie Robinson going to Major League Baseball had an impact on integration outside of sports? Absolutely it did. So the sports athletes of today, the stars today, whether it's Maya Moore sacrificing her career, Colin Kaepernick taking a stand, now players like LeBron James and Patrick Mahomes to get it behind voting rights, those guys are going to bring forth change from a standpoint that probably would not have happened if those particular people were not involved because of their platform and because of the reach they have, especially now with social media, guys. You know how big that is in terms of reaching younger people and getting them engaged. That's why I believe this is one of the greatest turning points in our history, and I'm just hopeful that all this progress that is always positive for the greater portion of society will continue, and we'll get to a point where we'll look back in this in a couple years or a couple decades in a history book like, damn, I wonder why it took us so long to get to that point. But now that we are here, we have to take advantage of what's happening.
Absolutely. We'll be talking to Renee Montgomery coming up in just a little bit about the things she's doing and taking a year off her career off. Michael, it is always good to talk to you, my friend. Have fun out there. Be safe, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
When are we going to Farmington and beating Golic's ass? That's all I want to know.
Bun, let's go. Let's go. I challenge extended.
Wow.
Come on.
All right. All right. You're on, man. Let's go.
See, that's
Boom.
A quality move
let's
by
make
him.
It happen.
Way to spin his way onto a different course. I mean, that's just
that's
a heady flex by my friend Michael Leaves.
Well done, Michael.
All right, buddy, be well.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
What? We could sleep in another half hour? Thanks, sweetheart. And you'll change yourself too?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Atlanta Dream Guard Renee Montgomery, and we bring her in as a member of the WNBA, but she is not going to be partaking in the start of the WNBA season. She is going to go out and continue to fight the fight for social equality and justice and equal rights for all those people of color in the United States. Renee, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate the time and the information you're going to share with us. At what point in all of what go on in this country over the last couple of months, did you decide this is more important than continuing my basketball career?
I think just having conversations with my mom. You know, she was telling me about the things she went through, and this is a generational problem, as everyone is seeing. This is a problem that most Black Americans can tell a story. Most Black Americans know someone that has a story. And when I say a story, it could be a police brutality story. It could be a story where they were subjected to racism in the office. You know, like every Black person has a story or knows someone very close to them that does. So I think just that concept and knowing that, it made me not want that to happen anymore.
So, again, the protest and all that started weeks ago after the killing of George Floyd in that horrific situation. But as we know, and certainly as you know, Renee, other things, there had been other killings that had happened before that where some momentum would start and then it would somewhat stop. Why this time do you think it could carry on and be different?
Well, first, because it's not only Black people fighting for this cause anymore. You know, you used to see sit-ins, you used to see walkouts, and it was majority white, Black, if not all Black. Now you see just a lot of diversity in these protests, a lot of young people at these protests. And so that's encouraging. Young people have almost been a hands-off approach, you know, like, oh, that's politics, we're not going to get into it. Now young people are starting to voice their opinions and being heard. So I think that that's key. And then also that now is different cultures fighting for the same cause.
So along those lines, because we've said that here, and again, we mentioned my son is on vacation. He's 30 years old, so the younger generation, and Trey and I both in our 50s, but three white guys talking about this situation. And you just mentioned more people are involved, not just the African-American. So what do you say to those who don't know what has been gone through by the African-Americans as far as helping this cause?
Yeah, I would say to people, so that's exactly why I'm going into the educational aspect of reform, because if people know better, hopefully they do better. And a lot of people just don't know about a lot of Black history, just things in general. And that's why the history book should be in chronological order. A lot of people don't know about Juneteenth. You know, everybody knows about the you know what I mean? Like, people know about the proclamation, but they don't know that it took 2 years later for all the slaves to realize they were free, for the message to get out. That's Juneteenth. You know, Texas had a stronghold That's Juneteenth. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't associate the racism with today. So a thing that I'm noticing is a lot of people are thinking, well, that's 400 years ago. That was a long time ago. Nope. My mom participated in a walkout because there were students that were throwing pennies at a black student performing at a talent show, and no staff did anything about it. So her and her classmates, her black classmates as well as some white, had to do a walkout of the school to show that they wouldn't accept that behavior. But that's my mom, you know? So people associated with, yeah, I understand back in the day. No, this is now.
Renee Montgomery with us of the Atlanta Dream, you former UConn women's basketball star, but again, is not joining the WNBA bubble experience in Florida to continue the fight and continue the movement. So what are your plans? What are you going to do? And what are the things that you have set up for yourself now going forward?
Yeah, so my mom that I spoke about, she was also a college professor for 30 years at West Virginia State University, where she met my dad. So I'm going to start at HBCUs. And also, we have to get some lobbyists in the school system. I don't know when the last time the history books have been updated, but we need an update, and we need all the history to go in chronological order. That means black history being a part of American history, not just being a part of Black History Month. So we have to get some lobbyists. We have to get some people on ground in the education field. And then when HBCUs, a lot of times it's funding. You know, funding harbors creativity, because if you don't have any money to create any programming, kids just feel like their hands are tied. So funding STEM programs with HBCUs, as we know, technology is not something that the minority community has delved in. So I'm trying to do some different things for the community, just that can have a lasting effect, just not a right now thing.
Renee Montgomery with us. And Renee, I'm just curious, and it may not have had anything to do with it, but I'm just curious if what you've seen your former UConn teammate Maya Moore do, was that something that sort of inspired you to do this as well?
Definitely. I mean, she did it before it was a thing. You know, that's why people that are pioneers and trailblazers, they deserve all the respect they get, because they did it before it was the norm. You know, right now in America, everyone understands that, yeah, we got to fix this. This is not okay. We just watched a man get murdered on TV. So people, we all understand that now. It's a common knowledge. She did it 2 years ago. Colin Kaepernick did it 4 years ago. That they were ahead of their time. So absolutely, I think about that. And I always talk about it so that people know I'm not the first, and I'm probably not going to be the last, but I want them to know who the first was.
And Renee, one of the other things we see changing is it's been a few years since you've been in college. It's been, as an athlete, it's been many years since I was at Notre Dame as an athlete. And we even know, even from your time in college and mine, it was kind of the college athletes really didn't have much of a voice. And it wasn't heard. And it certainly is changing now as players are speaking up more and more at colleges. So your thought on that and how you can even help those college athletes continue that.
Yeah, and I'm so happy you said that, because it's important. You know, a lot of people look at athletes and they just, like, you know, we know the term, the step and dribble, but it's a thing. The reason that whole thing went viral is because a lot of people felt the same way that the reporter that asked LeBron that question did. They don't typically want athletes talking about social issues. They don't want athletes talking about politics. People are like, I just want my athlete just to be my athlete. And, you know, LeBron James has really changed everything when it comes to that. I actually recently joined his More Than a Vote campaign. And if people don't know, they're building a generation of athlete activists in a sense of giving athletes a platform. Uninterrupted has continually gave athletes a platform with the More Than an Athlete, More Than a Vote. So those things, I think people will get more attached to athletes, because I feel like the more you know the story behind an athlete, the more you're connected to them. So I think it's beautiful.
Well, it certainly is. And what Maya Moore started, absolutely, you're right. What Maya Moore did sort of went unnoticed until now. It's remarkable what she has done, and it's remarkable what you are doing. So Renee, I guess the plan is to go forward now. Do you have any idea about how long this will be for you? What are your long-term goals in terms of continuing on this path or potentially coming back to play?
Yeah, so my long-term goals are to use this year that I'm sitting out to lay the groundwork. I want to build things that are not going to just be a one-year thing. I want things that are going to be annual. I want events that are going to be annual. So now that I'm not playing this season, I want to, like, get all the groundwork, do all the research, get everything in place so that things can continually run in the future. So that's my plan with that. I'm not hanging up the sneaks yet, if that's what you're asking. But, yeah, I think that it's, it's hard to get things off the ground, you know. So this time right now, while the momentum's going, and, you know, I've been saying that moments equal momentum. So while we have this moment, I want to get everything off the ground so that it's almost in autopilot. We already have the template. We already have the blueprint, and we can rinse and repeat every year.
We're talking to Renee Montgomery of the Atlanta Dream and the WNBA. Again, she's not playing this year to continue the fight that she has been going through. Have you, in talking to other, whether your teammates or other players in the WNBA, what kind of conversations have you had about those that were maybe thinking about doing the same thing, or those that are saying, you know what, I'm still going to go play? What has that been amongst your peers?
Yeah, so I've talked to multiple people, you know, that they saw what I'm doing and they just reached out to show their support. And when I say multiple people, I mean in the WNBA, in the NBA, NFL, soccer, like a lot of people reached out to me, which I'm so thankful for. And, you know, they were telling me their thoughts. And that's why I made sure I said, I don't think that anyone going into the bubble is against the movement, you know, because it's almost gotten to the point where athletes have to prove why they're going in the bubble. You know, I'm opting in because basketball is important to me. I'm opting. It's not a opting in or opting out, us versus them. It's we're all together. So I have talked to some other athletes and we already are planning some things. I have plans with people in the bubble and outside the bubble. So I'm excited because we've never had this much continuity between different leagues, you know, maybe this is what we needed to have continuity between leagues, but I've never been so tied to so many NBA players, NFL players, and even soccer. That's different for me. So yeah, I'm excited about how people are uniting.
It is incredible. Even at NASCAR as well. I mean, so many athletes amongst each other communicating and trying to move forward. And I think one of the best things, and Renee, you mentioned it, going forward is the athletes getting together to talk to communities about the vote, because boy, that is one way that will affect change so much from a local level vote to a national level
Absolutely.
Vote. So I think that is one of the most important things you're doing out there. So I got to ask a quick one aside from this. We had Gino Auriemma on, your coach. You were in Maya Moore's coach on yesterday, talking very glowingly, obviously, about what you are doing and the type of player you were. But I got to know, have you ever had a coach that yelled at you more than Gino?
Oh, maybe Coach Reeve, maybe Cheryl Reeve at the Minnesota Lynx. A lot of people say they're similar in a lot of ways, but I, you know, in the same breath, they're both two of my favorite coaches. So I think that's my style. I like when people just shoot it straight. I don't want anything sugar-coated, leave the fluff at home. So that's kind of my style. And I like it because then I know that's what they meant. You know, when somebody sugarcoats things and talks around it, you don't know. You got to read between the lines. They're going to tell you exactly what they're thinking.
I don't think Gino knows what sugar is.
Yeah.
No.
I think Gino knows what the sugar is that helps oxidate the wine, the red wine that he likes very much.
He needs to send me a case of wine while you guys mentioning that.
Oh, there you go.
Gino,
okay.
You heard it.
Send Renee a
He's
case
like
of
a wine.
Wine
connoisseur. I don't know if you guys know, but he has an amazing seller.
Oh, I'm aware.
Okay.
Trust me, I'm aware.
Yeah.
Listen, Renee, it's great to catch up with you. I had the privilege of covering Renee when I was doing the Women's College Basketball Tournament for 7 years, and she was part of that 09 team that went 39-0 and won the national championship. Let me just say, Renee's always been about it. So, yep. Renee, good to catch up with you. I appreciate what you're doing, and best of luck in all the things you're doing on and off the court.
I appreciate it again. Thank you guys for having me.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.